If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athletic-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence. Helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Here we go again, another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast, getting ready to roll out. And today we're going to be talking with Grexall Mountain Gear. And man, it was in 2017, the owner Austin reached out to me and he's like, hey dude, I'm starting to make these game bags and I want you to have some and test them out if you feel so inclined. I was like, hell yeah, man, send them to me. So he sends them to me and then I am actually able to use them. Me and my other buddy, Dan from New York, we end up shooting a mule deer out in South. He ends up shooting a mule deer out in South Dakota. And then we cut this thing up and we used these game bags and they performed pretty well. Well, he reached out to me again and he's like, hey man, I got some new products I'd like to share with you if you're interested. So he sent me another box. I'm like, hey dude, why don't you just come on the podcast and let's talk about these products. And so now it's not just game bags. He's getting ready to, like, this different variety of game bags. He has European skull mounts, and he has boot dryers. And that right, those boot dryers right there are going to be pretty cool. And so I got a pair, and I think I'm going to be using them a lot, especially when I'm out west and it's hot and the feet are starting to sweat, things like that. Now, the cool thing about all these products are made in America. He is adamant that everything, as much as humanly possible, can be made in America. And that's kind of the credo that he lives by. He wants very high quality. He wants returning customers. And he puts all the money right back into the business. And that's what keeps the quality high. And dude, I don't know about you guys, but I love high quality. And, you know, I'm a fan of Made in America stuff too. And if that equation works out, I would love to support not only that individual company, but all of the other companies within the United States that support that company, right? So, and he talks about that. So it's a really good episode. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. I'm going to keep the intro short on this one, and I am going to run the commercial now, and that is Code Blue Scents. Now, Code Blue is a scent company. They have real urine. They have synthetics. They're the scent elimination sprays. They have deodorants. They have laundry detergent. And the thing that I've been messing around with, and actually tomorrow, whenever you guys are listening to this, me and my son are heading down to the new farm that I've gotten access to, and I'm going to be putting out some more mock scrapes. And the kit specifically that they offer is called the Rope-A-Dope. It's the orbital gland. And so what I'm going to do is I just got done doing an interview with Troy Pottinger. He's like the mock scrape master. I myself am going to try to, you know, do some mock scrape stuff and hopefully get that in front of a trail camera or get that within shooting range of a whitetail. And I really do think it's going to pay off if I do it right. And so Troy, that episode, you got to go listen to it. Right. And so that's what I've been doing. I have a discount code for you. First off, you got to go to their website, read up on all their products. And if you do decide to buy it, enter the disc. It's codebluescents.com. And then you use the discount code NFC20. And that's going to get you 20% off. So that's it. Let's get into today's episode. Have a good one. 3, 2, 1. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today's guest, I think it was about 2017, reached out to me and said, hey, I'm making some game bags and I want to send them to you. Would you be interested in taking them? And I was like, yeah, dude, send them my way. I'll give them a try. Luckily, that fall, me and my buddy Dan from New York went to South Dakota, and he slayed an absolute giant mule deer, and we were able to use those game bags. And so today, Jeremiah Johnston, just kidding. His name's not Jeremiah Johnston. His name is Austin.
Come on. It's a long German name. It's really easy.
Austin. What's your last name, Austin?
Bernsketter.
Bernsketter, that's right. Austin Bernsketter. And he's back. He's on the podcast today to talk about his company, to talk about his game bags and some of the other products that he has. But before we get into all that, why don't you talk to us a little bit about how your season went last year, man?
My whitetail season was dismal, and it has been for 3 years, Dan. I go out west every year, and I've had a lot more luck out west. I don't know what it is. It's like I think I spend more time sitting in a whitetail stand than driving out west for 2 days and hunting for a week and then coming back.
Right.
So that kind of sums up my season. I killed a 6-point bull, and I killed a 4x4 muley, and then I struck out over and over and over and over again on whitetail.
And so, and what state do you live in?
Missouri.
Missouri, okay.
Yeah,
man, that's I mean, some guys do that. Some guys just are almost automatic out west, and then they get home and they struggle. I know a guy. I wouldn't put him at automatic out west, but it's easier for him on the style that he hunts, on the public land that he hunts out west, than it is in his very small parcel farms that he has access to for whitetails in Michigan.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not Michigan. Right. Missouri, we got some great deer crop, but yeah, I still hunt pretty small places. And I don't know. I have the problem of always trying. Oh, you know, I see a pretty good buck. I'm like, oh, I could, you know, there's big buck every year. One of my neighbors kills like a 170, 180. So I'm always trying to play the waiting game. And then, it, you know, it's rifle season. I'm like, oh, I still don't have a deer dead. And then it's late season and I still don't have a deer dead. And I'm like, what the hell did I do? I should have just shot an eight pointer. I mean, come
right.
on.
Right. But I'll tell you this. Eventually what happens is deer like that get like, you know, you just kind of go through the motions. You say it's dismal, but those deer are getting older and eventually you're going to shoot a monster. That's just what my guts tells me.
One of these decades, Dan, I will.
You know? Decades. Right. Right. Yeah, man, we're out west. You hunt.
I've been to Colorado, Idaho, Wyoming, where else? Utah. I feel like I'm missing a place. I'm trying to go to Montana.
Yeah.
This year I got a Colorado just leftover tag. I just do OTC or general and all of them. I haven't drawn anything. I haven't done one an actual draw. I got a Wyoming general tag.
Yeah.
Like going actually to what you just said on a podcast a few ago, you were talking about your Wyoming points and you got eight. Oh man, Dan, you need to burn those on a general unit. There are some, I'm not kidding, dude. I don't know what a good unit in Wyoming takes, but right now the general is without specials, probably five points plus 6 points.
Yeah.
So like,
I don't know.
There's some spots, Dan, that you can hunt with a bow. What I did in Wyoming when I drew my journal, I hunted with a bow. I went with another guy and he got a 6 point bull with his bow. Then we had to leave. So I came back by myself. And the tag in Wyoming, the general tag, they're good for rifle as well.
Okay.
So I came back with a boomstick and killed a bull, you know, 3 weeks later.
Oh, nice.
So I'm a big fan of the Wyoming general, man.
Yeah. A lot of it has to do with just time, right? Because, and now I'm to the point with my preference points in Wyoming where when I go, it will be my only Western hunt that year, probably my only out of state hunt. I've got eight preference points now. So I got eight preference points and I probably don't need this many for antelope, but I got eight for elk, eight for antelope, and I believe six for mule deer and or for deer. And so when I go out there, I am going to go out there with the hopes of spending like multiple weeks.
Oh, you're going to get all, you're trying to get all three species.
Well, no. Not okay. Not in a single time, but like when I
what do, a madman.
Yeah, when I go out there, I that wouldn't happen with my wife and kids. But when I go out there for my elk trip, it will be. I'll be out there. I'll probably get out there September 1st, and I won't come home until I kill a bull or like 14 days, whatever comes first.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to dedicate two straight weeks to.
That's the way to do it, man.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the option, though, too, Dan. You could just, you know, throw it all away, everything you've worked for, your family, your kids, your wife,
yep.
and just hunt, dude, you know?
Yeah, there's days. There's days.
I know, man. Me and one of my buddies talk about, we're like, you know what? We should have just acted like we were gay this whole time. We could live together, bank a shitload of money, and hunt all the time, dude.
Dude,
it'd be the life.
Dude, I saw that. We're like, okay, so a guy said this. Said the same thing to me. He's like, did you know that, you know, now that all these rules have passed, gay people can get the same insurance as, you know, regular married couples, which, oh, great, you know, good for them. But now I can get married to my best hunting buddy and we can share resources and go hunt more. And so, I mean, just because you get married to a man doesn't mean you got to have sex with. I don't know.
Yeah, dude.
Avoid
all the butt stuff and just have fun. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, this part might get edited out or maybe not, but I mean, there's always loopholes that a person can take advantage of. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, Dan. I mean, what's gay about living with another grown man in a double wide, you know? There's nothing gay about that.
Nope, not at all. So product. All right.
Yes, sir.
In 2017, you decided to start messing around with game bags. Why all of it? I mean, Are you an inventor? Are you an entrepreneur? Or like, why? What do you do for a living? First off,
I do a few things, but I'm a mechanical engineer. I got a degree in mechanical engineering, so I contract work for my brother, and I've done that since maybe 2015.
Okay.
When I graduated college, and then I sell fireworks. I have three, four, five stands. This depends on the year around Missouri.
Okay.
And then I do Graxol. So that's kind of the things I do. But I decided to do the game bags because one of my buddies lived out in Colorado. One of my rugby teammates from Missouri moved out there and said, "Hey, man, let's go elk hunting." I'm like, "Sure, I've never even thought about it. So let's go." So we packed our bags, got a Colorado over-the-counter tag, and went and got into elk. And it was awesome. We didn't kill a bull, but we got really, really close. I mean, we got very close multiple times. And we were using pillowcases. And I'm like, man, these damn pillowcases sat in my bag for 10 days. They weighed 2 pounds and took up as much as a basketball in my bag. I'm like, this was terrible. So I went back home and just started experimenting with stuff, ordering lightweight fabrics, making it as light as I could, changing up seams and stitch patterns and all this stuff. And I found a super strong yet very light fabric that will hold hundreds of pounds. You know, you can poke a hole through it with a knife or a stick or a rock, but it can hold tons of weight. So if you don't subject it to a lot of abrasion or a puncture, you can hold tons of weight, and it compresses to almost nothing, like the size of a beer can for a whole set. I mean, you can attest to that.
Yep.
So I made that, brought it out in 2017, and I killed an over-the-counter bull in Colorado. And it was a big bull, and it fit in the set of game bags I made. I'm like, holy shit, this is actually going to work. Like, this fit the bull perfectly, like, they work great. They breathe great. And so I just started making them.
Awesome. Awesome. I do have to derail this conversation already. You said rugby.
Like, yeah, dude.
Where did you play rugby at?
I played in high school. We had a team. I'm in Jefferson City, Missouri, the state capital.
Yep.
And we had a team for years. And then it got, I don't know, disbanded or whatever. And then when I was a sophomore in high school, it restarted. So I played for them for 3 years, and then I played a season at University of Missouri.
Okay.
And then I played like another half season at the St. Louis Bombers. I don't know if you ever played them or heard of them, but
yep, I've heard of them.
So they were a pretty good team. I mean, but at that time I was commuting, like I had to go drive over an hour to practice, and I only did it for like half a season or a season, and I'm like, I couldn't justify the time. But yeah. Dude, I loved rugby. I played football, wrestled, and rugby. And rugby, man, oh, it was great. It was the best sport I've ever played.
Yeah. I loved it. Like, I was a little nervous to start playing it because I didn't start playing it until my junior year in college. And then I played it for like 5 years after that. So I didn't play through the college I was at. I played for a club team of a neighboring city. And, dude, once you get past the nerves and realize that if you aren't going out trying to wreck people, it's a physical sport, don't get me wrong, but if you're smart and use your head and tackle with your brain instead of just throwing your body around like football. The thing I always say is I wish I played rugby first before I played football, so you could actually learn how to tackle without using your pads. Yeah.
Without using your head across their body too.
Yep. And dude, like I feel that a person who would learn to tackle without pads first could go then put pads on and be an absolute savage. Especially because, you know, in football, in rugby, it's not about like smashing them. It's about trying to get control of the ball. Right.
Yeah.
And dude, if you could do that, just like a smart football player could strip the ball so well, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Rugby, more young men need to play it, man. It's a very difficult sport. It's a great sport. You know, it's like a mix between wrestling and football.
Yeah.
And, you know, no breaks.
Yeah.
But that's actually what I want to get into. That's a good segue, Dan, because I saw a reel of you. And I knew you lost a finger. I'm glad you have all your toes.
Yep.
But I lost you almost. I heard you almost lost your wiener in rugby, which is insane.
It wasn't. Dude. No, it wasn't my wiener.
It's your vas deferens, right?
It was my nuts. I about had my nuts, you know, torn from the rest of my body, and so, I had a vas deferens break. What else? I broke my jaw. I never got it fixed. That's why I have such a like a crooked smile and worn down teeth, because my jaw was broken in a tournament. And
it makes you look damn tough though, Dan.
Yeah, makes me look something. Maybe like a handicap or something. Anyway, all right. Back to the conversation. So you start making these game bags. Like, how does when you start off, when a company starts off with just one product, how do you, and you have no footprint in the industry at all, you know, you're brand new, how did you get the word out about your game bags?
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-kid pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Oh man, I guess this was, I got good timing. I guess I had, that's when podcasts were first coming up, you know, I mean, the podcast, some of them were established and big, but there wasn't very many. Mm-hmm. And just like the whole hunting influencer thing was kind of in its infancy. And I was huge into hunting, you know, whitetail before that. But I guess what I did really was just try and contact guys like you, you know. Mm-hmm. I was contacting the Dan Johnsons of the world, Ryan Lampers. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's a Western guy. Mm-hmm. Brian Call, all these different Western guys. And, you know, it's a no from most people. They never even get back to you. But then some guys were like, sure, man, I'll try them out. And if they're crap, they're crap. And, you know, there's no strings attached. I'm not looking for an endorsement. I was just like, you know, I'm just eating money to just send all these guys stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some guys like them and some guys get back to me and other guys you never hear from them. But that was kind of my strategy. And yeah. I got pretty blessed, lucky, fortunate, whatever, that some guys liked them and then told some people and word spread a little bit. So,
yeah. What is it about the game bags? Okay, so you mentioned that it's real light fabric. When I pick it up, it reminds me of tent fabric. Is that a good description?
Yeah, it's close to the same thing. It's a nylon and not a sil nylon, so it's not impregnated with any waterproofing agents, you know, silicone or PU, polyurethane.
Yep.
It's just a straight nylon, and it's a lower denier. It's a lower density.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference, I guess. And when I first did it, the only other even semi-light game bags were, I don't know if they were a lot. They were called bomb bags, boneless meat bags. I don't think they were Caribou. They were either Caribou or Alaska Guide or something like that. There were some, Pristine Ventures. That's what it was. They were the only other one, and they were in Alaska.
Yeah.
And theirs were just white, and I think these were made of polyester. So they were a lot heavier duty, a lot heavier.
Yeah.
Which, that's great, but I was into backpack hunting where you don't want to carry an extra pound. I mean, you want to carry almost nothing.
Yeah.
So, and mine were orange, which they were a different shape. They're long and tubular, which none of them were. They were all big pillowcases. And then mine were orange. So one, you could see your kill site from a long way. And two, you could use them to flag stuff. I use them to put them on my skulls when I pack skulls out, you know, so you don't get shot by some dude.
Yep.
So those are the things I tried to change with it.
Yeah. And they turned out, I mean, just from when we used them, man, they're really durable. And the cool thing about them, obviously, is machine washable, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'm filthy. I just soak mine in a sink with some detergent and hang them on the deck. But yeah, you can wash them in the washing machine on a gentle cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I did. I told you before we started recording, in 2017, went out and shot that mule deer. Took the mule deer to the processor, quickly stuffed those game bags back into some kind of box or bag that I had. I think into the carrier case bag that they all stuff into, and then threw it in the back of my truck and forgot about it for like 3 months. And then I went to go take them out, and they were just disgusting. I threw them in the wash, and Zippo, they're back to clean again. I didn't dry them, obviously. I just hung them. You know, they spin washed out, and then I hung them out on the chair out front. And so,
they air dry in like, you know, 30 minutes pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And so how's that part of the company doing for you?
Oh, it's doing great. I'm having problems keeping up, and like going back, you were talking to Jacob about the American made stuff, and my game bags are more expensive than pretty much everyone else besides Marsupial.
Yep.
But mine have different features. They're lighter. They're the lightest. They're the lightest game bags you can consistently use.
Yeah.
And they're sewn in America, for what that's worth. You know, it is becoming difficult though. Whenever there's a lot more competition, you guys, you know, we're talking about all the bino harnesses out there.
Yeah.
Well, everybody and their brother's coming out with game bags, and they're getting them made in Asia. And it's like, they're making them, like some of these companies are making their sets of game bags for practically what I have in them. Like, I just can't,
right.
You know, they're selling a set of elk game bags for 55, 60 bucks. And I'm just like, that's not possible. I pay my sewer. She's getting paid over $20 an hour. Like, you just, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I take it so from a material standpoint, some of these competing game bags are, it's probably similar, right, for a quality.
Yeah, I mean, they're using, I would say their fabric's a little cheaper because it's heavier, and it's counterintuitive, but heavier fabric is usually cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the more technical the fabric, the pricier it gets. So their fabric's a little cheaper, and you know, you're not paying shipping costs because they're making the fabric in textile mills in Asia, and it's going straight to the factory and sewn, then shipped to them as a finished product. So they're saving a ton of freight and labor and cutting and all that stuff that I have to incur.
Okay.
So
the material that you use isn't manufactured in the United States. The creation of the product is made in the United States, correct? Or you do that in
the US? Yeah, and okay. Some of the components, like my string is my reflective glow wire. I think I was the first one to do that, but my game bag string is 250-pound cordage made by an American company with tracers in it that glow in the dark.
Oh, nice.
And that's American. The cord locks, it's back and forth. My thread's made in Germany. But the fabric is Asian. I've got it from Vietnam before, and most of the time, though, it's China. I actually sourced a full roll of some American-made fabric. It's parachute nylon here is what we call it. And it's, you know, berry compliant. It could be sold to the military. But it's so expensive, Dan. It's unusable. It's four times the price of my fabric. It's so expensive, my game bag sets would, like, double in cost to sell.
Yeah.
So I just can't do it. And they want... It's crazy because with COVID, everything slowed down, but the lead times from the mill here I got quoted was 10 or 12 months, and they needed a minimum of 10,000 yards paid up front. I mean, you're talking more than $10 a yard. I mean, the numbers were just getting insane. Like, wait, so I have to give you 50 grand and wait a year for fabric? Like, I can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it important to you as a manufacturer that creating the product in the U.S. is important? Paying someone in the U.S. to sew your game bags is important.
Well, I guess there's a lot of reasons to it, but I guess if you look at the overall picture, what it does is it's not just the woman sewing my game bags, or the women, or the people assembling them, like my nieces and nephews and all different kind of people help us. It's the chain of who it helps and who it supports. I mean, the American company with the cordage, like they're not getting cord done and delivered to them. They're manufacturing it, but they're getting components from other American companies. You know, this reflective material, the braiding, you know, then you got the woman sewing it. She's going to Hobby Lobby or wherever, you know, getting her thread. There's a million different people that are supported in this just because you sew it here. There's a lot of other industries supported here that do it. You know, I use an American wholesaler to import my fabric right now. So that's another person that's making money. They employ people. It's just like there's a big pyramid of people of Americans that are benefiting from it. And you know, you guys were talking about the other day, the tribalistic thing. And I don't want to be too tribalistic, but I'm looking out for my own. And if the world's a big sports game or, you know, whatever, if I want to support Americans if I can, if at all possible.
Yeah.
And there is a point where it becomes impossible. You know, if my game bags are $200 some a set and everyone else is 50, I get it, man. It's just, hey, Austin, maybe you should fold your hand and not do game bags anymore.
Yeah.
But while I can still decently compete on price and for sure compete on quality and definitely beat them on service, I'm going to keep doing it. So
yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in the conversation that we had, with Jacob a while back, I think people are willing to pay a price for that. Now, everybody's price is different, but in the margin, right? From you're making, but the margin between the lowest product in that category and the highest product in that category, I feel like people are willing, especially people in the outdoors hunting, are willing to pay more for an American-made product if it means, and one big thing for me would be to have access to somebody to where I can call them and go, hey, listen, man, you sent me some bags that were just jacked up. And then my guess is you would be like, dude, I'm sorry about that. Let me get you some new bags, right? Like
100%.
Customer service, taking care of the person. And then once you start getting outside of that, then it just becomes like the water becomes dirty and people can't just say, because they have this huge process, their products are on a boat for potentially a month or so to get here. And they're not doing the quality checks at all until maybe they unload the shipping container.
No, Dan, they're not doing that even.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're just sending them out because that's the only way to do it efficiently.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my point. Right. And I feel like people are willing to pay more money if it's an American made for that reason alone. So that's cool, man.
And I'm trying to upscale, Dan. Like I have some really cool game bag designs. Like, I mean, that sounds kind of stupid, honestly, thinking about it, but you know, total nerd over here. But
yeah.
I got some bone-in game bags. I've just been struggling to release and even a lighter version of game bags. And I'm struggling because I'm struggling to find the American labor who can do it for a cost that actually customers will pay for, because I don't make that much money on a set of game bags. Yeah. Like, so I'm trying to, that's the difficult part, is finding the labor. And, you know, every industry is experiencing that. And people, you know, it's like all the trade skills, whether it's men or women, you know, welders and plumbers, carpenters, electricians, sewers, seamstresses, these people have skills that are no one else has, and you got to pay them to do it, you know?
Yep.
And sewing especially, it's a dying art in the United States. I mean, most of the sewers for the bigger sew shops, even if they are American owned in the US, they're all foreigners and or visa holders, green card holders, or first generation Americans. They're not just, they haven't lived, their grandpa didn't own a farm, you know?
Yep.
That's not most of the sewers in this country.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
It's difficult.
Yeah. All right. So.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Recently, you've introduced some new products, and I'm just going to name them here. You introduced some skull hangers for European mounts, like all the way from deer to elk, and then also some boot dryers, all right? And so whenever I see a company, there are companies that, okay, if you said to me, hey, these game bags is where I started, but now I'm going to introduce a tent or another product that uses that same fabric, then I could understand it. But now you've jumped into an electrical product, these boot dryers, which is plastic and electrical, and then also metal skull hangers, right? So talk to us a little bit about these new SKUs that you're offering and what gave you the idea or why these products to add to your lineup.
So I know. So you're correct. Everybody, especially in the hunting industry, there's a lot of, you double down on one thing, mm-hmm. like, you know, you get into textiles and fabrics and stuff, and you just go that to the end. And then the problem is, though, that leads to a huge problem, which is so rampant, is copying or right. trying to reinvent something that doesn't need changing. You know, there's a million tents, there's a million sleeping bags. There, at this point, there's a million game bags. There's so many textile things. There's so many gadgets and things out there that are already done. My whole goal was to actually create things from my own brain that are unique. I don't want to copy anyone.
Right.
I don't. That was my main thing. I want to make something come from myself that is actually useful and better than what's out there. Or there is no current product at all to do it. Yeah. So that's kind of was my impetus for it.
Okay. All right. And so, I mean, the boot dryer one, I want to get to that here in a second because I think it's unique. I think it's cool. But skull hangers, right? There's already been skull hangers on the market for like decades now. Mm-hmm. Are your skull hangers made in America too?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So there's the big one. You know, it's made in America. The design you have is different. Talk to us a little bit about the design. And I know both the elk and the deer hangers are different, but talk to us a little bit about what makes these different from the rest of the skull hangers on the market.
Can I grab the skull right quick? Are you gonna show some of this video?
Well, I do have it on YouTube, but I also will be descriptive in how we talk about it so that people can okay. understand it. So yeah, if you need to go grab a skull, go do it.
Yeah, no, I got it right here. I'll just grab the skull. I'll show you.
Yep.
So the deer skull hanger, you're right. There are 1,000. I've bought 1,000 off Etsy, mm-hmm. and I was always disappointed. They were cheap, super thin gauge, pot metal shit, probably most of the time made in a foreign country, and there was no quality control, so flimsy. And I'm like, man, I'm paying 10, 12, 15 bucks for this piece of shit. That's what I mean, over and over. And I had a bunch of euros hanging in my basement, mm-hmm. or just sitting on the ground, really. So I'm like, I gotta figure this out. There's a better way. Then I have a couple bucks. One of them has a busted off main beam, and another one has no main beam at all. And they were just hanging weird. I'm like, no skull hanger I have that's simple can do this. So I just made this little product that it's this long tab. It inserts into the back of the skull like that. And then I made two prongs go underneath each side of, you know, whatever that, the brain stem, the spinal cord entrance.
Yep.
So all you do is you slip that on and the head cannot rotate. It is locked in. It can't rotate any which way. It'll fit any deer, any small game. And I've never seen anything like it. So I just thought, I scoured the market, didn't find anything like it, and thought that solves all the problems. It solves heads from rotating. It's high quality. It's powder coated. It's made in the USA, and it's a different design, totally different. So that was my deer. Then I got a bull here.
Bull elk,
the same with the elk hanger. I thought lots of the elk hangers, they were either, lots of them were cheap, I guess, you know, say 25 bucks, but they were terrible. You'd hang them up like, oh, I'm not going to name this one company, but this big, you know, they're in Cabela's and everything else. They have a hanger with like a center sheet steel on a swivel, and it's like their deluxe hanger. And I bought a couple of those, and the head's so wobbly, it can fall off. It's just this big contraption. It sticks way out from the wall. I'm like, man, these mounts look like crap, and they're hanging off the wall 3 feet, and it's just flimsy garbage. So I thought, man, I need to make a mount that's adjustable and more secure and be super easy, where you don't have to use a stick and string and pliers and all this crazy shit to get your head to hang. So I went through a ton of prototypes, and I made a hanger that it sits behind the eyes of the elk. So it just hooks in right there behind the eyes and the occipital bones. Oh, yep. Another piece rests on the jaw.
Okay.
And the skull's locked in. Now, this plate, there's a plate on the bottom of the mount with through holes. And there's an adjustment plate I sew with it. So what you can do is on a big bull, like this is a medium sized 5x7. It can just go straight on the plate. You can put the adjustment plate out a notch or two, and it'll bring the rear tines closer or further from the wall. So you get a big bull, a big 330-inch bull, you're not going to be able to have his rear tines. You don't want his rear tines to hit the wall. Obviously, it won't fit on any mount.
Yep.
So my plate allows for the bull to sit. Its rear tines go more upward, or a smaller. The smaller the bull gets, the more you can go backward. So you can always get a clean against the wall look with your skull. And elk skulls are very heavy. So a lot of them, when you put them up, the bones of the jaw or teeth or the rear tines hit your drywall and gouge the shit out of your paint. So this solves that too.
Yeah.
So that's why I felt it was different enough to actually produce. And I've never seen an elk mount or any mount that fits behind an animal's eyes.
Yeah.
It'll hold a cow skull. It'll hold a bear. It'll hold any big skull.
Okay. So, is that steel?
Yeah, this is steel. This is like, man, it's thicker than eighth inch.
Yeah.
I forgot what it is, but
yeah, it looks thick. I mean, it looks thick. And I will agree that I have a couple skull hangers downstairs that I bought that do have that bracket where it can swivel and you can move the head to the left or to the right. And I will say this, it's thin. And even something as light as a deer skull hanging on it, you can see it pull, like you could just see it like being flimsy, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna, if you're talking about the same one I am.
Yeah, and I don't think it's gonna fall off my wall or anything, but you know, something like my kids throwing a ball around downstairs could easily pop it off and knock it loose. So, yeah, man.
And then also on a man, mine come with fat, everything you need, instructions, mm-hmm. fasteners, a QR code. You can just go to the website and see, you know, how it goes up. But, you know, also you buy these skull hangers, they don't have screws to mount it to the wall. Mine are flush head screws. They look good. They're powder coated. Everything's matching.
Mm-hmm.
The elk one's toolless once you mount it to the wall. It's just, I tried to make it simple and not just totally jip people. Like yeah. I'm trying to give them value and not just, you know, I'm not trying to just mass produce something and rake in the cash.
Yeah, I feel you. And I'll tell you what, that ultimately leads to good business, if you ask me, right? If you put the product before everything else, right? Maybe when you sell it, and usually this is what happens if you say, you know what, I've done my time with the company, I think I'm going to sell it. Then let the other people raise the prices and screw everything up. Mm-hmm. I just feel like that's what happens, especially when, and I know this is kind of a side conversation, but anytime there's a really good product out there, it gets sold to one of these bigger companies that is basically a holding company for more products. It turns to shit because all they care about is money. And then the
yeah.
product suffers and the customer service suffers. And I could sit here and name, you know, four or five companies.
Yeah, Dan, they save the 88 cents or a dollar extra to include the screws and the washers. Yeah. They save the another 85 cents to make the steel thinner. They save another 50 cents to reduce the powder coating thickness. Like they just, yeah. And before you know it, you have a piece of shit.
Yep. That's a fact, sir. Anything else special about the skull hangers? And do you have any plans for any other type, any other versions of it?
Yeah, I do have a plan for another version of the elk one, but it's going to be a while out. And the deer one, actually, I'm working on a kind of a cool novelty version of the deer one. I don't really want to get into it because someone will take it, but, yeah, I got a few changes that won't happen this year, but maybe next year.
Yeah.
And you know, what's funny about the hangers, Dan, is I thought, oh man, these things are going to sell like hotcakes, and it isn't the end of the season yet. But then after I got these all made, up and package them and store them, I'm just like, you know what, I'm not really selling that many. I need to get the word out. But also, if you think about it, I sell the deer ones in a 3-pack. I'm like, man, even a good hunter, like your average good hunter who doesn't travel, he's gonna use one a year. So yeah. Unless they start giving them as gifts or they're traveling out of state, like I'm not gonna sell as many as I thought. Like, yeah, and most people, you know, they're not gonna fill one a year. So
right exactly. All right, boot dryer time. Again,
okay.
It's It is a product that is plastic. It's electronic. It is different from everything else that you're currently doing. Why this boot dryer? And then explain a little bit about what it is and why it's pretty cool.
So kind of the same thing. I mean, lots of Western guys struggle with wet boots. And when you're backpack hunting, you're kind of screwed. So if your boots get wet, and especially if you have full grain leather boots, they're wet for the whole trip, essentially, unless you get really warm days, early season. So that was happening to me, and it's happened to a lot of people. And I think it was Brian Call one time on his Gritty podcast. He was saying, like, I just wish someone could cure wet boots. And I'm like, oh, I know how to do that. Like, I got a pretty decent way. I did some calculations on the power usage and size I need and everything. So I'm like, I could figure it. I have the same problem too. Like, I do need to figure that out. So I took my 3D printer and just made a prototype and sent it to him within like a week or so. And he's like, damn, man, this thing actually works. And then, so I started getting a little more commercialized with it and maybe sold a few of them to guys, and then just kept kind of improving it along the way until I have what I have now. But it's even with us, like lots of Western guys now, they're using stoves and hot tents.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you do that, your boots, the outsides get dry, and you can put them right next to the stove and your leather will crack, but you're not getting warm air into the boot. It's pretty much impossible.
Yeah.
So that was another thing, like, oh, this will bring air into your boots and dry them out super fast. So
yeah,
I got to work and started making this, the boot dryer.
Did you do any testing for, like, okay, first off, let's explain it here. It's two circular fans, right, that are completely enclosed, and they are how they're less than an inch thick, right? Like how thick is the whole
fan itself? Is like, yeah, 10 to 12 millimeters. Yeah, it's less than, it's probably 3/4 inch, the total profile
vertical. And yeah, then it's basically the end of it is like the size of a baseball bat, somewhere yeah, around there.
A little, about three inches.
3 inches. Diameter. Okay.
Three and a half, maybe.
Okay.
Three and a half.
And so those slide right down into the boot, and there is a switch on them that turns them on, and the fan starts to circulate, right?
Yeah. So yeah, you lace up the tongue of your boots a little bit, and you just pop these in the top of your boot, and you plug the USB in, it's built in, into any power bank, and it comes with an extension cord. But yeah, you just plug it into any USB battery pack, and boom, they start rolling. They draw air into the boot, and they have vent holes so that, you know, humid air can escape.
But gotcha.
It's just drawing air into the boot. That's the main principle.
Gotcha.
And if you want to, people could try this at home, but lots of people have like the peat boot dryers or like 110 plug-in boot dryers. They have heat.
Yep.
But actually, if you take your wet boots, say you work all day and your boots are soaked, just flip them over and put a box fan on them pointing into the boot. Your boots will dry way better, and they won't stink. And they'll be dry 100% and much faster than just like a heated boot dryer.
Yeah.
So people at home can just try that, you know, Midwest guys, and see.
Yeah. So did you do any tests where you took like a boot, just put it in a bucket of water to soak the whole thing, dump it out, and then throw these bad boys in? And what was the result as far as time is concerned? Because I look at something like this, I go, okay, this is cool, but if I get back to camp at midnight and I got to be up at 4, you know, or something like that, or 4 or 5 or whatever the time is, what the hours are, how long does it take to dry?
Yeah, at 70, I did do that before I even sent the first prototype, but at 72 degrees Fahrenheit, and I don't know, the humidity inside my house, say it was 55. I don't quite remember, but 55% somewhere in there. It took the dry time from boots, these full grain leather boots that I soaked, it took them to about 2.5 hours. They were dry.
To completely dry.
Dry enough to wear.
Okay.
Whereas when I would not use them, the next morning and into the next evening, they would still be wet.
Right.
So, I mean, that's fast.
Yeah.
And even if they're completely soaked and they've been soaked for 4 days, say your dry time is 4 hours, your power usage is still negligible. So if you plug them in all night your boots will be dry as long as you're not camping in a cloud. Like when I mule deer hunt out west early season and I'm high country, I don't bring them because I'm camping literally in a cloud, and all you'll be doing is pumping moist, cold air into your boot. So in that case, you have to have a heat source. You'll have to have a wood stove. Yeah. Now, if it's aired out like it usually is in the west, then you put them in, you know.
Yeah.
That's the caveat for the dryers. They're not a one, you know, they're not an outlet plug-in dryer, but they're damn good for lots of situations out west.
Gotcha. Okay. That's cool, man. And so good reviews from them, from people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. People love them.
Yeah.
And there's lots of hikers, campers. There's dudes that just keep them in their truck year round, and like, they'll put their floor defrost on and pop the boot dryers in their truck cab, and boom, their boots are drying while they're driving somewhere.
Yeah. How long does the boot dryer, the battery in the boot dryers last? Like when you unplug it from the USB power source, turn it on, how long do they last?
No. So it's only external power source. So there's no battery built in. You have to have a power source.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. If you look, I show it on the website, but if you look at what the actual power usage is, it is, I haven't looked at it in a while. I think it's 1.25 watts. Yeah, it's 1.25 watts. So it's a quarter of the power using your phone. So imagine if you have your iPhone plugged in for an hour charging, you know, it's at 50%, you charge it for an hour and it's at 100. These boot dryers use a quarter of the power. So if you have them plugged in for 4 hours, it'll be the same draw off your battery as having your phone in for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yes. So it's very low. So for a phone charge, you can dry your boots out completely in like very wet boots, and you get 2 nights of drying your boots out for a phone charge. Okay. So that's one of the design factors. I had to have them efficient because being a Western hunter, I have to have my maps work first and foremost, and my feet can suffer. So I thought, well, that means it has to be low power consumption. You know, the lowest I can still make it and efficiently dry boots, because I would much rather have my InReach and my OnX or whatever mapping software I'm using available than using boot. You know, if you had to make the trade-off, you're going to use your maps every time. You have to.
Right.
So.
Right. Man, very interesting. It's cool to see companies like this prosper and, you know, take, because I have a feeling this is the long road, right? You're in it for the long haul, not necessarily for quick returns and money right away.
I've never made a dollar off Graxall because the money I have made just goes right back into the company, and it's, yeah, I am in it for the long haul. I want to actually build an innovative company.
Yeah, that's a fact, man. Well, that's cool, man. Anything else about the product line that we missed? Any new products or categories that you're going to be addressing in the upcoming years?
Yeah, I'm coming out, like we talked about earlier, I'm coming out with some bone-in bags eventually. Every year, last 2 years, I said, oh, I'm going to have them by season, and I haven't. So just some more bags. And yes, I have a completely new product. I think it's even cooler than the boot dryer. I think it's 10 times cooler, and there's nothing like it. And it's a lot of development and systems and stuff, but it's going to be used by Western hunters and Midwest hunters alike, that I've been working on for about 2 years.
Ooh,
I can't give much more away, but I'm trying to get it released at the Western Hunt Expo this year.
Oh, cool. That's awesome, man. Good for you.
So when it does come out, Dan, you'll be getting one of them for sure. And it's a pretty high value project. So it's not a cheap item, but it's a cool item.
That's cool, man.
I can't say anymore. I'm sorry, but.
Gotcha. Is it a device that will drive your car for you and not get in an accident when you're driving home to or from a long Western hunt?
It's better than that, Dan. It'll do that, and it'll text your wife, send her flowers. It will hire babysitters for the kids, book massages, male masseuses to come to your home and oil up your wife.
There you go.
But not touch any further. It will do everything you want it to, Dan. It will be you, but better, and you won't be anywhere.
So it's a robot, basically.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, dude, it's a, yeah.
That's cool.
It's a traveling robot.
There you go. All right, man. Well, hey. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to come on here and talk about the company and talk about your new products. If people want to find more about Graxol, where should we send them?
Just www.graxol.com, G-R-A-K-K-S-A-W. You can Google Graxol. You can go to Instagram, look at Graxol. I don't really post that much stuff on Instagram. I'm trying to get better about it, but I'm just terrible at it. But
yeah.
You can go to any of those places and check out what I got going.
Perfect. All right, man. Appreciate it. And good luck this upcoming season.
Thank you, Dan. You as well.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.